Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll speak with a local faith leader and elected representative who will both be taking part in a special event hosted by Modus Theatre this evening, reading the words of women who are in sanctuary. We'll hear why they are concerned about the plight of immigrant women. Then it is Electric Vehicle Week. We'll hear about an event or a couple of events happening in Longmont, one this evening, another on Saturday, and the rise in popularity of electric vehicles. John Lendorf will join us for the latest food news on Radio Nibbles. Then, just after the bottom of the hour, Tish Buford is your host for A Public Affair. And this morning, she takes a look ahead to this Saturday's March for Black Women happening in Denver, particularly poignant in the wake of yesterday's news coming out of Kentucky. At 9 o'clock, it is the latest edition of our Radio Book Club, a collaboration between KGNU and the Boulder Bookstore. And this morning, we'll speak with Denver author Stephen Dunn about his latest book, which takes a look at the military, specifically the Navy. It's all coming up, but first, the latest local headlines. Protesters gathered in downtown Denver last night, reacting to the news that no police officers were being charged for the death of Breonna Taylor. The Denverite reports that a woman who was at the protest sustained minor injuries after a car drove into a crowd and hit her. A car driving north on Lincoln Street, close to the Capitol, approached the crowd. The Denverite said that protesters encircled the car and started hitting the bonnet, telling the driver to turn around. Others in the crowd demanded that the protesters stand down. However, it's reported that the driver accelerated, hitting at least one person, a woman who sustained minor injuries. Earlier in the day, George Brockler, who's the district attorney for the 18th Judicial District, which includes Aurora, announced that the driver of a Jeep who drove into a group of protesters this summer will not face charges. On July 25th, as part of the ongoing protests demanding accountability for police and the death of Elijah McClain, demonstrators marched and blocked traffic on I-225. The driver of a Jeep drove into the crowd, but Brockler said that the video of the event suggests that the driver, in fact, attempted to avoid people as he drove through the crowd, something that many people who witnessed it disputed. A protester who fired a gun at the Jeep himself faces several charges, including first-degree assault with a deadly weapon. He's free on a $75,000 bond. Brockler said on Wednesday that if any new evidence comes to his office suggesting that the driver of the Jeep actually committed a crime, he would consider charges. CU Boulder now has the state's largest outbreak of the coronavirus. Nearly 1,200 students and 12 staff members at the University of Colorado have confirmed cases of COVID-19, by far the largest outbreak anywhere in the state. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment reported 1,198 students have confirmed cases of COVID-19. 104 were considered probable cases as of Wednesday. Boulder County health officials have said that one student from CU has been hospitalized from COVID-19, but they say they have since been discharged and no deaths have been linked to the CU Boulder community outbreak. In the weather today, expect warm temperatures around the Front Range. Once again, we'll expect to see highs in the mid to upper 80s with sunny skies in the forecast for today and tomorrow. Similar temperatures through Saturday, slight drop in the temperatures. That's the forecast for Sunday. Highs then expected to get into the mid 70s. It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Modus Theatre, based in Boulder, has for many years been raising the voices of people who are impacted directly by the broken immigration system. And they do this very often by having other members of the community read the words written by those immigrants themselves. Well, this evening there will be a live performance via Zoom of Women of Resolution. It's going to be read by female religious and political leaders here in Colorado. I spoke with two of the people people who will be reading the words of women who are in sanctuary. Kim Lucas is the Episcopal Bishop of Colorado and Representative Leslie Herod, a Democrat from Denver. I asked Representative Herod about the importance of raising the voices of these immigrant women, particularly with the news coming out in the past week about forced sterilization of immigrant women in detention.
You know, I think that with what we've seen recently with the forced sterilization, there's so many people who have reached out to me asking if it's even true, right? Because it seems like something so outside of what America would do again. But it's something that we have done and we are doing right now. And I believe that the reason why people aren't activating more around it is because the federal administration has done a such good job of dehumanizing people and immigrants. And that's why the work of Modest Theater is so important, because that is when we actually hear from immigrants themselves, women in sanctuary themselves, about how they got there, their journey, and the fact that they're just humans wanting the same things that we all want. You know, art is so important in telling those stories, but it's also important in activating us to demand better and expect change.
Well, aside from the awful stories of the forced sterilization, of course, for the past couple of years, we've been dealing with the reality of children being torn from the arms, literally, of their parents. Very often it's their mothers. And so highlighting once again how women and immigrant women are so vulnerable in the current situation. And there was, of course, that wave, you know, a few years ago of women and children showing up at the border because they were fleeing violence in their own country. And so once again, you know, women and children being further victimized by this. Bishop Lucas, you know, what are your thoughts on that? That women and children, because it's very hard often to separate the two, particularly in the context of immigration, they're so vulnerable in a lot of the countries that they're fleeing, and yet they're put into even more vulnerability when they come here to the US seeking safety.
You know, for me, it has been a really tragic thing from a theological perspective, as someone who is teaches folks that we should see ourselves in all people. We should see ourselves and other people's suffering, that there's been this sort of callousness from my perspective about the plight of people who are in detainment right now, in inhumane conditions, especially the large numbers of women and children. And again, I go back to what Representative Herod said about sort of people's humanity. It's become so easy to deny people the understanding that they are siblings in this world with us, that they are human with us, that we share this planet and we share responsibility for one another. And I think for me, part of what MODIS does, I think, is elevate the reality that we as human beings have so much in common that we share. And I think telling those stories and giving voice to those narratives, reminds people who may have forgotten that these are human lives we're talking about.
Well, both of you will be literally giving voice to some of these narratives by participating in this model that is so unique to MODIS, where they have other folks in the community read the words of people living through this reality, and that just impacts people in so many different ways. These are women who are in sanctuary, and this is a very specific thing. And of course, Colorado is leading the way in terms of high numbers of folk actually seeking sanctuary in faith-based communities here in the state. Representative Herod, I mean, do you see the fact that we have immigrants seeking sanctuary, very often women who are trying to do all they can to stop their families from being separated, that this is just further indication that the system is broken, that the laws don't function because people literally have to go and lock themselves into a church?
Well, absolutely. I think that's exactly what it says. I mean, you know, I think we've forgotten the American value. And one of our American values is that we welcome refugees and immigrants onto our shores. And that is not who we are anymore. That is not the nation that we have become. We're not opening our doors to refugees. And I think so many people still think and uphold that American value and that dream of what it is to be on American soil, only to face the harsh reality of detention camps, having your children ripped from you, having your uterus literally removed from your body. I think that we need to look at these as atrocities, and our government should respond. It should respond and ensure that this does not happen and never happens again. Our system is inherently and catastrophically broken, and we must fix it.
Bishop Lucas, your thoughts then on the role of faith-based communities, because so often these folks are in sanctuary in a faith community, in a different church. So as somebody directly involved in, you know, faith communities, what do you see as the role, not just in providing that physical space for sanctuary, but also maybe speaking out, getting involved politically, talking about this within their congregations?
I think it's a powerful statement for faith communities to not just offer sanctuary, but to talk about the why of it. Why do we do this? And a part of the disconnect that Representative Harris talked about in the church, you know, the Atlantic Monthly showed that among white people who identify as Christian, there tends to be more harboring of racist views and a more denial of systemic racism, which is at odds with what we're called to live. And I think we do have a place in our life as people of faith to be a witness to the government, to be a witness to the culture, to be a witness to everybody about how God does not discriminate against, you know, the Creator's children. And we have an obligation to make that witness in addition to sheltering folks in our buildings. We have a bigger witness to make. And I hope that my being a part of this conversation actually helps encourage other communities and other faith leaders to make that witness as well.
Well, both of you are very aware and have been for a long time of what's happening right now through your work, whether it's as a faith leader or Representative Herod as a legislator. Yet, as part of this process where you got to speak the words of a woman who's in sanctuary, did anything change for you? Did you learn anything, or what was the experience like?
Yeah, absolutely. In just reading the words and participating in this program, I have specifically introduced and passed laws related to immigrants and their ability to access justice. While I'm at the state level, we can't do as much as we would like because that's a lot in the federal government's hands. But I have introduced a bill to ensure that people are arrested in our courts, in our court system for just seeking justice, right? For either, you know, being a victim, a witness, seeking justice from landlords that are trying to abuse them or wage theft. It is important that we have safe havens for immigrants who live here. Immigrants who are our neighbors, who are our community, we must make sure that they have the same access to justice. So I introduce and pass those bills, but also I think, you know, what I'm hearing from my colleagues who are also running these pieces of legislation, it's been essential for me that we bring in stories into our committees. It's been essential to me that we actually tell the story of immigrants so that more of my colleagues understand why this is so important.
That's State Representative Leslie Herod. We also there heard from Kim Lucas, who's the Episcopal Bishop in Colorado. Two of the women taking part in this live performance via Zoom of Women of Resolution, and it's presented by Motus Theatre. And it will feature sanctuary leader Rosa Sabido as well. And you can find out more about how to participate this evening at the website for Motus Theatre, motustheatre.org. It is 8:20. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU. Well, it is Electric Drive Week, or rather, Drive Electric Week, celebrating electric vehicles. And in honour of that, Sustainable Resilient Longmont, they're hosting some events. There will be a panel discussion this evening and then an electric vehicle parade happening on Saturday. I spoke with Luke Nadeau of Sustainable Resilient Longmont about how we're doing as a country with electric vehicles.
Well, we're doing great. In some ways. Adoption has been somewhat slower than I think a lot of people have hoped. But I think what a lot of that revolves around is that people don't understand just how great electric vehicles are. So, for example, electric vehicles right now are on parity for upfront costs, especially if you factor in the incentives that you can still get through the government, both the federal government and Colorado's government. So you can get a new Leaf, for example, for about $20,000 after the incentives, which is comparable to the gas equivalent of that vehicle. But then, starting right then, you start saving money because you pay about, at least in Longmont, with our electricity prices, you pay about 72 cents a gallon, the equivalent of 72 cents a gallon to drive that vehicle versus $2.30 a gallon for a gas vehicle, for example. And there's a lot less maintenance on electric vehicles. So there's actually there was an article in the New York Times just a couple days ago, and it said that they always talk about parity. When will electric vehicles' upfront costs match the equivalent gas vehicles? And it's happening much more rapidly than people imagined. And so without incentives, they think that that will happen in well before 2025. And again, that's just the upfront costs. As soon as you buy the vehicle, you start saving a lot of money. As a quick example, I bought a used Leaf a few years ago, and my wife uses it to commute to work. And we replaced a Prius hybrid with it, and we save around $500 a year over our Prius in operation costs.
To have enough electric vehicles on the road, it does seem that we'd need to have the infrastructure to support that. And that's not just people being able to charge their cars at home, but enough electric vehicle stations around accessible places to make it worthwhile for people to use their car, either for commuting or even for long distance travel. How are we doing with that type of infrastructure?
Yeah, there's a couple things there. I still have a gas vehicle. I have a Prius, and that's our long distance vehicle. So for long distance travel, there are slowly becoming, it's becoming more feasible, especially with the Teslas and their charging infrastructure. Now, if you have a Tesla, you say you want to go to New York City, and it tells you exactly where every charging station is and how long it will take to charge. And but they're ahead of the game. And in fact, Tesla just had a stockholder meeting. In fact, I think they're still in it, and they're discussing all their advances in batteries. But what it boils down to is in the next 5 years, the long distance travel with electric vehicles will become much more feasible. And, you know, we still have a long way to go with charging, just getting the charging infrastructure installed. But we've come a long way.
That's Luke Nadeau with Sustainable Resilient Longmont. They're hosting some events to honour National Drive Electric Week. And this evening from 6 to 8 p.m., they're going to have a Zoom webinar discussing all kinds of everything about owning electric vehicles. And you can hear directly from electric vehicle owners. There'll also be a virtual electric vehicle tour and test drive as well. And then there'll be an electric vehicle motorcade happening on Saturday, beginning at Roosevelt Park in Longmont. That's starting at 5 p.m. And you can find out more at the website for Sustainable Resilient Longmont. That is srlongmont.org. It's time now for Radio Nibbles.
Have a banana, Hannah.
And it is time for Radio Nibbles with John Lendorf joining us from his home kitchen in Louisville. And John, it seems like the last few shows we've been talking about the brutal impact that the coronavirus pandemic has had on local restaurants. And there's a knock-on effect then, some local food events also being impacted.
Well, virtually every local food, wine, beer, other event this year, like everything else, has been canceled, and that includes First Bite, Boulder's longtime fall restaurant week. And instead of just folding up the tent for the year, the folks at First Bite have put together a wonderful new cookbook that's coming out November 12th called A Bite of Boulder. And it looks really good. It's got 40 recipes that you can cook at home from restaurants in Boulder County, and stories about local food.
And you're contributing to it as well.
Yes, they asked me, being the old guy, to look back at the last 10 years of food in Boulder and kind of how we got here today. So I enjoyed writing that for them. And I like the book because 50% of the proceeds from it will go to a relief fund for the restaurants and their workers, you know, as we come into the fall.
Well, people can find out more information about that at firstbiteboulder.com. Well, John, another thing we talked about, I think, last week was a run on canning supplies, because with so much produce, certainly here locally, as a result of the early snow and frost that we got, a lot of people harvested their stuff early. But what do you do with it all? Growing Gardens in North Boulder might be on hand to help.
They are, although you still may need to find some ball jars and caps. Growing Gardens is putting on a serious canning and preserving 101 online course from October 8th to March 31st. This is a big one. But if you take this course and learn how to preserve these foods, it'll really make your food life joyful, you know, for the rest of your life. Because it's, at moments like this, you can take the crops and turn them into something.
Well, growinggardens.org is where you can find out more about those series of garden and canning and preserving tips. Canning and Preserving 101, growinggardens.org. Well, another local food event, the Flatirons Food Film Festival, is being pushed out, really, I suppose, as so many events are. It's moving now from October to January.
Yes, there will be a benefit event in October for the festival, but it's 8 years old, and it's actually going to be bigger as a virtual festival than it was as a attending festival. So we're looking forward to that.
And you've been enjoying some local garlic as well.
Well, I haven't yet. I think you and I and everybody else, you have to make a beeline down to the Weeby Farms booth. I don't know if you've ever visited there at the farmer's market, but it's a local farm that specializes in garlic. And, you know, you think, oh, it's just garlic. If you actually sit down and taste different kinds of garlic, they're radically different and wonderful. And at the moment, she's got at least 8 different varieties, and they keep well. So you should grab a bunch and save them for the winter. Keep yourself healthy.
Well, in terms of things that don't necessarily keep well, but that we do keep for a long time, I know you've got a public service announcement about herbs and why we kind of stockpile them, but then they go off a little bit.
Well, yeah. So you don't go out and buy, you know, 20 heads of lettuce at one time to stock up, right? Of course not, because you'd say it wouldn't stay fresh. But then, and you go out and you buy enough dill, paprika, and cloves to last 4 years. And by the time it gets to the end of its life, it's lost all its flavor, or you'll end up throwing it away. And that's just unnecessary. Buy the herbs and spices, you know, fresh in much smaller quantities, and use them up. It's really better.
Well, you can catch more of John's food waste tips on Friday mornings and check out our entire food waste page at news.kgnu.org. But what's the best thing you've tasted lately?
I went to Munson Farm stand at 75th and Belmont to, of course, get some corn. And I noticed they had their own honey. They grow a huge number of pumpkins, and this year they kept the bees and collected the honey, and so they have Munson Farms pumpkin blossom honey available at the stand. It doesn't taste like pumpkin. It has a light orange hue, but it's really, really delicious honey, and it's local.
Pumpkin blossom honey. It's that time of year. Well, bon appetit.
Bon appetit, everyone.